We're studying the sugya here on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, and the Gemara sets up a be'idna, an overlap between the chiyuv misa and the chiyuv mamon. In the case of tachav lo l'toch beis habliyah. So we started this discussion yesterday, and we'd like to conclude with Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. And that you'll see here on, one second, on the bottom of page 9. So he writes the following. Ubishiurei Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. He writes the following. Now we're speaking about a sugin gittin, which is the case of Menasech Yeno Shel Chavero. So he steals it, but for the purpose of Nisuch HaYayin. And Reb Chaim saw in that sugya a fantastic conclusion that a gazlan becomes a gazlan even if he means to do nothing other than destroy the object. And Reb Chaim supported that sugya, and the conclusion that he thought was valid from that sugya, from another sugya, which is in Bava Kama Tzariches, Hazorik Matbea Shel Chaver Liyam. So in both cases, the Gemara assumes that he's Chai Mishum Gzela. And in both cases, he seems to have no other interest than destroying the object. And that touches on the following question. What is a Kinyan Gzela? Right, when a gazlan makes a kinyan, which means, number one, that he's chayv in onsim, and number two, it means that if he upgrades that kinyan with, let's say, selling it, or perhaps he's magdish it, then that's called shinui, and he could be kona with shinui, shini rishus, shini shem. All that is a result of kinyanei gzeila. And the question is, do we analyze kinyanei gzeila from the perspective or from the rules in that universally govern kinyanim? Kinyanim means I acquire ownership over something for my own benefit, for my own purpose. I want to take it into my rishus. So before we see the chiddush of Rav Shmuel, just in the previous paragraph, we have a chidushei harashba in Gittin, in that sugi in Gittin, on daf nun beis amud beis menasech yeno shel chavero, and the Gemara assumes that michi agbe, from the moment he lifts up the casket of wine, kanye, he has a kinyan gzela, which means that he's chayv in onsim, or that he can be kona with shinui. He says afal pi, says Reb Chaim, shelo choshev legozlo. He doesn't want to have any use or benefit from this wine. He's not drinking it. He's not feeding it to anyone. He's just pouring it for idol worship.
Well, Reb Chaim's making an assumption, which may be a premise that I'm missing, and I just need to get it. Reb Chaim's saying that the definition of gzela is that you need to want it for yourself. I mean, I need to want that object as opposed to I don't want him to have it.
In the Havamina, we'll see if that's the maskana of the Rashba, but in the Havamina Reb Chaim, if I don't want it for myself, then is that called a kinyan?
But what is it then called? I mean, I can't say
just like,
I wanted to destroy
it. He's basically
it.
Just moving the object from place to place. You know,
without rishus.
Without rishus. Maybe he's a shol shalomi das. I don't know what you want to call him.
Right.
As I said, I wouldn't give him shishi, but he hasn't yet acquired ownership. All the chiyuvei gzela are a result of kinyan. Where is this kinyan? So Reb Chaim thinks that there is no kinyan.
So
in his habamin.
Right, so in the habamin, in the case where I took something out of someone's pocket to throw it into the yam, is he calling him also someone who just moved things around, or is he calling him the mazik? In other words,
right, in such a case would be a mazik, but so not a gazan.
So Reb Chaim is almost Reb Chaim saying that anytime you want to destroy an object that you're taking unlawfully, you call it mazik. Anytime you want to keep the object you're taking unlawfully, you call it a gazan.
Right. Well, again, keep in mind that there's time T1 and time T2 between the time that he picked up the matbea, let's say, and he threw it into the yam. Let's say something happened in between. Right. Do you follow what I mean? Like lightning struck and the matbea went up in smoke or something like that. Would he be responsible to pay for it? And Reb Chaim is saying that in his halam, you know, since he didn't have a kinyan gzela, he's not chai for onsum. If lightning struck, then tough luck. You know, the bala matbea lost his matbea. And yet the Gemara says just the opposite. The Gemara, and that's where Reb Chaim wants to slug up this halam, you know, and reinterpret kinyanim when it comes to gzela. A whole new set of regulations that apply to kinyan gzela. Reb Chaim wants to say that even though when he picked up the matbei had no intention to do anything than throwing it into the yam, nevertheless that's called kinyan gzela. So if the object goes up in smoke, he's going to be responsible for that. He's got a kinyan gzela and he's chayim in onsen. Again, it's not such enough. Well, I shouldn't say what I'm about to say, but I'll say it anyway, just pedagogically. It's not enough just to say that he threw it into the yam. You know, if he's chayv as a mazik anyway, and that was Reb Chaim's halam. I mean, because what Reb Chaim is going to try to prove is that by throwing into the yam, he clinches his kinyan gzela. And then Afkamin, if you remember, is the Rambam Hilchos Gnevu who says he pays kefal kishash shvira. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll leave that out for now, because I just wanted to emphasize the Rashba. The Rashba and Gittin, We have to go through the sugya inside, but anyway, Shmuel rejects the ukimta of Rav as menaseh. In other words, that Rav understood that what happened there in the Mishnah Gittin is that he took the wine and he poured it as avodah zarah. So the Rashba says, why does Shmuel reject that? And Svile de Masnisin stomach, Tony, afil lo higbia al manas ligzol, velonis kami leknoso, visuvlo shayach michi agbe kanye. In other words, the way that the Rashba understood Shmuel's problem with the simple interpretation of nisuch, which means the way Rav understood it, that he actually poured it, says the Rashba that Shmuel was bothered by this because in such a case, how can he be considered a gazlan? And he says the following: Lo shayach michi agbe kanye, mashma. It would seem from the Rashba, the svile denasa gazlan dafka kishakivein ligzol liatzmo. So again, before we get to Reb Shmuel, we'll have to assume again. You know, this is the dangerous part of learning the Mishkanos. The Mishkanos of Rohim is that we sort of rely on him, you know, sort of as a somchen al hachacham, and he's deriving from this Rashba the conclusion that according to the Rashba, this goes back to Reb Chaim's Havamina, at least in the sheet of Shmuel, the Rashba insists that we're not going to say that as soon as he lifts up the wine, he's kona it. He has to be a guy in order to become a gazlan for kinyanin gzela. It's dafka kishakivein ligzol liatzmo. But if he was almanas lahazik, then he doesn't become a gazlan. And the Rashba therefore raises the objection according to that understanding of Shmuel. What do we do with the sugya of zorek matbeil yam, where he is considered a gazlan despite the fact that he had no intention of taking it for himself, but rather almanas lahazik?
Well, is that really a
that's the Rashba's kash.
Is that really a hezek? Because we did learn before that he says it's intact, it's there.
Right, go to the bottom, you'll get yourself a diamond, right? That's
right.
Going to come up also.
No, it's still there, and it was a modest.
But right now, let's assume it's lost, right? So it's almanas liavid, so we have goes almanas liavid, and perhaps this would explain to Yerushalmi that goes almanas liavid, in the case of Otsiu Listim, he doesn't have to pay for the loss of the animal. And the reason for that is because it was only almanas la'avid. So now we have the following. We have the Shmuel's interpretation in Gittin, in which gozel has to be li'atzvo and not almanas la'avid in order to be considered a gazlan with kinyonik zeilu. We have the Yushalmi in Masechta Bava Kam in Reish Perek HaKones. Yushalmi also assumes that the listim are not going to be chayv mishum gzela because it was almanas li'amid. And on the other side of the equation, we have the Gemara of Zorek Matbea Shel Chaver Liyam, and there the Gemara says explicitly that he's considered a gazel.
What about between the time that he took the yayin, and then he poured, and the time that he poured it what was he doing? He wasn't a mazik then. He wasn't any. What was he? What during that period of time?
So the question is he a gazlan? So Reb Chaim would say that if his intention in picking up the wine was to pour it to Avodah Zarah and therefore destroy it, because it becomes Yisrael, I know, Reb Chaim wants to say that he's a gazlan.
But he was a gazlan because something happened between the...
Right, so I'm saying even if let's say at the end of the day, what happened to the casket of wine is that it got blown up or something, right? Then Reb Chaim would maintain that he's chai for onsen because a gazlan, once he makes a kinyan gzeilah, is chai for onsen. Right. He'd be responsible. But the way the Rashba says it in Gittin, at least in Shmuel's frame of reference, is that this is not considered magbi al manas ligzol. He doesn't have any kavodas kinyan that would make him into a gazlan with a kinyan gzeilah, because in fact he was Almanas l'nasech, which he calls Almanas l'aved.
Okay, so
and the Rashba therefore says that in order to be a gazlan, you have to take it for yourself. And if you don't take it for yourself, then you're not a gazlan.
What does the Rashba do with the time between? With the what is his relationship to this object before he actually destroys it?
No relationship whatsoever.
So he has He has nothing.
Right. No chiyuv whatsoever, until he actually does the nisim.
And he actually moved it, he went from one place, he could have taken it.
And that's why Shmuel in the Gemara Gittin refuses to interpret that this is what happened in the Mishnah. He has a different interpretation of the Mishnah. And all this is going to touch on our sugya, because again, in our sugya, if we assume, which is I think a pretty solid assumption, that the tochev, right, we're talking about, let's get the Gemara's language, shetochav lo letoch beis ablia.
Right.
So he's basically interested in destroying the object. If we assume, which was the assumption of the Baal Amor, that eating the object is another form of destroying the object, and basically when you put the object into someone's base ablia, that itself is an act of destruction, yet notwithstanding the fact that it's Efshal Adure, right, we're leaving that out right now. So that in our case of a Tochev, the Rashba would classify him as a Gozel Almanas Li'avet, which would explain Rashi Shita that lo aviv v'lo mida, if you remember the discussion of yesterday, that why is the tochev out of the picture? Because again, Rashi assumes that if the tochev is chayev, then ipso facto the ochel would not be chayev. So Rashi has vested interest here in neutralizing the tochev, getting him out of the picture. Well, if you assume that gozel amanas la'abed does not qualify as kinyan gzeila, then the first guy, if he was only interested in feeding it, and feeding it is another way of destroying it, its consumption, then he's not a gazlan. And hence Rashi says, lo aviv v'lo midi. Very complicated assumption here. In other words, when do we say, and that was the sugya in Bava Kama, that if somebody feeds it, and if somebody steals it, and someone else eats it, then Rotsumisegover, and even the one who stole it is Chayev. That's because he didn't have an intention that someone else should eat it. He had an intention that he would eat it, let's say, or his sons would eat it. But at the end, someone else ate it. So what we have here is Rotsumisegover, because the Gozel is considered a Gazel. And again, because his intention was, says the Baal Amor, Almanas Lito Liatzmo, right? That was the Hainush Shalokach Liatzmo, remember? But in a case where he would be only interested in destroying it, or in another form of feeding it to someone else, but he has no interest in taking it for himself, then we would say he's not a gazlan. And that would reflect the sheet of the Rashba and Gittin, which we didn't know about yesterday. So we're a little bit smarter than we were yesterday, because yesterday we completely rejected this Imri Moshe and the whole nine yards, which is going to lead us to another possibility on the second side of this page about why the Tochev is not Chayv as a Gazlan. He didn't know this and that and the other thing. But really, fundamentally, we could say even if he knew exactly what he was doing, Nevertheless, if he didn't want to take it liatzmo, his whole intention from the get-go was to feed it to someone else, he's not a gazla. And that's what Rashi means. And yesterday we completely smashed this because Reb Chaim had so many proofs over and over again that a gozal manas li'abed is chayav, right? As long as he actively does something, right? Because Reb Chaim has this very sensitive limafreya kind of situation. But if at the end of the day he fed it to someone else, Reb Chaim would say he's a gazlan. And hence Rashi makes no sense. But now we're seeing another possibility. Again, we're not so happy with this possibility because how's the Rashba going to be mefarnes the sugya in Bava Kama of Hazorik Matbeah Shel Chaver Liyam? How's the Gemara classifying him as a gazlan? Because he's al menas la'avid. And here's where Reb Shmuel Rozovsky enters into the picture. He says, Yesh Lomar, this is, I think, about 5 lines up from the bottom of page Kuf Lamed Zayin in the footnotes. De goes al menas le'naseich lo choshiv klal gazlan al menas la'abed. He wants to suggest the following, that the act of nisuch hamayim, ha'yayim, is actually, pardon the expression, a constructive act from the perspective and the interest of the gazlan. If he is interested in being menasech hasayayin, so that's considered with sarko. Hence, he's chayav as a gazlan. V'dami legozel chayfetz al menas lechloso lehanaoso. You could have a situation where a person is going to consume the object, and that's why he steals it, but that consumption of the object is beneficial for him. Like, for example, we gave the case where he feeds it to his children. And that's considered choshev al menas li'ochlo. Now, this doesn't stim with the Rashba, because the Rashba, in that very case of nisuch hayayin, claims that the reason why Shmuel could not interpret it as a chiv gazlan is simply because he's not interested in taking it for himself. He's only interested in nisuch hayayin. In other words, the Rashba identified the kavanas Nisuch as Almanas Li'Avid, and hence Shmuel could not tolerate that he would be chayav as a gazlon in this case. According to Reb Shmuel, Almanas L'Naseh is considered Litzarcho. So we now have a very sensitive machlokas here, so to speak, about what constitutes Litzarcho. Again, if you assume the following assumption, then we're going to have a machlokas. The assumption that we're assuming is that a gazlan is only kona when it's litzarko, and not when it's just li'ibud. However, what constitutes litzarko, and when is it called li'ibud? If a person does something which is normal, which is halachically valid, and let's say he wants to eat it, or even if he wants to feed it to someone else, so then the kilui, that's what Reb Shmuel is claiming, is a kilui lahanasa. Now, it's even though he's destroying the object, but he gets benefit from it. Yeah, we'll have to see about Zorik Matbeah. But in this case where he consumes it or he has someone else consume it, that in Reb Shmuel's perspective is called Almanas Lichloso Lahanaoso Ulitzarko, and that would constitute Gzela. So in the case of destroying the object, again, not physically but halakhically by doing Nisuch with the Yayin, that from Reb Shmuel's perspective is Litzarko. It's a Kilui HaChefetz Litzarko. He benefits from the Kilui because that's the way he worships his idol level. But the Rashba is not saying that. The Rashba is saying that according to Shmuel, this could not be a kinyan gzeila, even though he's interested in nisuch, because that's called almanas la'abed. Now, if you turn to the next page, you'll see the following. He says that ulefi divrei hagrach. Let's go back to Reb Chaim for a moment. The dafkik shegozal almanas ligrom nezek biyadayim chayim. You remember that Reb Chaim had a problem with the Yushalmi in Bava Kama, because the Yushalmi in Bava Kama says that the listim are potur. Why should they be potur? You tell me, because it was gazlan al menas la'avid. They had no intention of schlepping this behema. You know, like I told you, it's a big computer. You know, the gazlan doesn't want to take this and schlep it. So he just lets the animal fly. So Reb Chaim says, so why should he be chayav? He's a gazlan, right? He's no different than Matbeah. So the answer is that matbeah means that he clinches his gzela with what? With a maisa hezek biyadayim. The maisa hezek biyadayim now becomes a clincher of gzela. Again, paradoxically, because its original intention was just almanas lahazik. But Reb Chaim has no problem with almanas lahazik, and you know that doesn't disqualify it as a kinyan gzela. Why then is the listener, in the case of the listener, Yushalmi says that he's not a gazlan? So Reb Chaim answers, because he's never going to actually destroy the object. When do we jack up his original lekicha, you know, his hotzav mershus pilem, to the level of a kinyan gzela? That's only when he destroys it biyadayim. So in the case of nisuch, Reb Chaim is very happy, because Reb Chaim is going to say that he stole it in order to destroy it with his hands by pouring it for the avodah zarah. In the case of matbea, everything is beautiful. It's almanas lahazik. In the case of the shliach who steals the object, he's kona with kinyanik gneva, despite the fact that he has no interest in it, but it doesn't matter. According to Reb Chaim, whatever he's going to do with it, he's going to do with it. But the exception to the rule is going to be the case of listen, where there's no yodayim. He says, yesh lomo to be alma. Oh, so now he wants to say the following. Wow. Here's what Reb Shmuel wants to do. Reb Shmuel now wants to reconcile the Rashba with Reb Chaim. And this is a tall order, because the Rashba, at the face of it, is a direct contradiction to Reb Chaim. The Rashba holds that if he steals it for Nisuch HaYayin, which is Ibud HaFefetz, he's not a Gazlan. And Reb Chaim says, as long as he's going to do it be a Dayim, and the Nezek will be implemented in time, he becomes a Gazlan, meaning he started his Gzela, now he completes his Gzela. How can you reconcile the Rashba with Reb Chaim? So he says the following. Here we have to introduce another concept, another sugya in Shas, and that's called Hezek She'eino Nikar. And he says the following. Menasech Shaini, even the Rashba is only focused on the case of Menasech. The Rashba himself would accept Reb Chaim's definition that goes El Menas Lahazik is a Gazlan. And hence we understand that Matbea is not going to be a kash on the Rashba. But Menasech is going to be the exception to the rule, because it's a Hezek Shena Nikar. In other words, what we need in order to make this Gazlan into a Gazlan is a physical destruction of the object, not a legal destruction of the object. The Eino Mechuyev Midin Mazik El Mishum Knas. Wow, this is fascinating. Even under the law of Mazik, if I imagine the following. I'm talking to you like a third grader. If I would go with my hands at your actually and whammy, and I could put a whammy on it, and now the object is Asur Bano, I would not be considered even a Mazik. Why? Because the object is still intact. We say that Menasech is Yenu Shel Chaver is Chayev. That's Midin Knas. It's a separate Machayev. It doesn't belong to the parish of Nezek.
It's not Momon,
it's Knas. You need a Bezdin of, I'm learning Sanhedrin now, you need a Bezdin of three Mumchim for that. Umenasech Shaini, Davi Hezek Shaini Nikar, De Eidem Achuyu, Midin Mazik El Midin Knas. It's a Bzunder Machayev. And I would have said that when the Chachomim established that Hezek Shein Nikar Shmei Hezek, they expanded the Torah's definition of Mazik, and he is a Mazik. Then there are two categories of Mazik. There's physical destruction, and then there's a whammy that you can put on something, and that's also called destroying the object. Nay, Reb Shmuel is saying it's a separate category called Knas. Uknas Zehu Stam Chiv Chachomim. In other words, it doesn't come under the category. It's not an extension of Mazik. This would be a very good example here. Some of you gentlemen remember when we learned Derech HaLimud, we always ask the question, is this an extension or it's a new category? And that's a classic Hakir. Here's the Hakir. How do we understand Hezek Shene Nikar Shmei Hezek, which the Rabbanan instituted? Is that an extension of Mazik? He's a subcategory of Mazik, or it's a new category of Knas, and he's only paying as a Knas? If we're going to assume that he's paying as a Knas, then the Rashba is saying that's not Midin Gzela. Gzela Almanas Lahazik is considered a Gazlan if it's Almanas Lahazik and we define it as Hezek. But if he puts a whammy on something and he legally changes its status, but it's not a physical change in the structure of the molecules, that's not called a Mazik. The Gemara says Hezek Sheni Nikar Shmei Hezek. It means as far as a Knas is concerned. The Rabbanan created a whole new Knas. But he says we're still not out in the clear. Why? Mikolokam Kosher. Right, so the sugi bava kama, he says he's potter mi din mazik greda. Why is he potter mi din mazik greda? How does he know that? Just one second. Ah, I know what he means. This is, Alan, what you were saying before. That where is the matbea? It's on the bottom of the sea.
Right.
So the matbea is still intact. It's physically intact. So if that be the case, then if the Rashba is claiming that in Hezek Sheinu Nikar, in the Manasseh case, it's not considered Gzela because he didn't physically destroy the object, and therefore he's not a Gazlan, then in the case of my Baal Yam, where he's only preventing the violent from getting a hold of it, and I guess they get the deep sea divers, that's not a Maisa Hezek that you can call a completion of the Kinyan Gzela. So why does Gemara say in Baba Kama that he's Chayav Midin Gazlan? That's how he ends it here in the Tzarech Iyun of Zorak Matbea. But going back to the text for a moment, on Kuf Lamed Zayin, the text itself on the top, since we came to the conclusion that we don't know Pshat and Rashi now, because if we're going to assume that Gozal Menas LaHazik or Kilui is considered a Gazlan, then why does Rashi say Lo Ovid Vlo Midi that the Rishon the Tochev did nothing? The Afal Pisha Rishon and Tolo Kidelitno Lechadveru Gamke Nasa get Gazlan. So now we're back to the question of the Machna Frayim that we started with. How could Rashi claim that the Rishon is out of the picture? Because he's Lav Midi Ovid. Now we're assuming the Rishon is a Gazlan because he took it, even though he didn't take it for himself, but he took it to feed it to someone else. So the Tochev should be Chayv as a Gazlan. Is Yesh Li Yashiv, the Bechai Gavna Modu, even the Balamor would be Modu, that Ha'ochel Gamken Chayav. Now this is not going to help us for Rashi. Why? Because the word, you see the words Gamken. What he's going to claim now is basically what the Ri says in Tosus, that Rotsumizegova, that not only is the Gazlan Chayav, but the Ochel is Chayav. And he's trying to reconcile the Baal HaMor, because if you recall, the Baal HaMor said that if Shimon is taking the object out of the Rishus of the Nigzal, and he is feeding it to the Ochel, then the Ochel is Potter. Right? That was the thesis of the Baal HaMor. Right? Why? Because the Otsar Di Debu, it's the first one, we called him the Tochev, he's the one who stole it and took it out of the Rishus of the Gazlan. Therefore, the Ochel is Patur. So he says, no. Even the Baal HaMor would agree that in this case the Ochel is Chayav. Why? Da Svirale, da Otsar De Machilhi, Hainu Dafkik Shagazal Itzar Atzmo. Because the Baal HaMor Shita is that it's only when he steals it for himself. The oz ena sheni sha'ochel mafsid levaylin, because if the Rishon stole it for his own purposes, hence he acquired ownership in kinyonik zela, and now the sheni is not causing a hefsid. Well, what does that mean? Let's understand what the Baal HaMor is saying. The Baal HaMor is saying Baal HaMor is asking the following question. There's the Gozel who took it out of the Rishus of the Nigzal, and then there's the Ochel. Who actually made it impossible for the Nigzal to get his object back? So what would you say in knee-jerk response? It was the Ochel, correct? Because ultimately it was the Ochel who knocked the nail into the coffin. He destroyed the object. Comes along the Baal HaMor, he says, no, we're not going to be Mechayev the Ochel. Why? He says, because once the Gazlan takes it as Rishus, if he indicates that he has no intention of returning it, he has no intention of returning it because he wants to fulfill his desire, whatever that desire is, then the Ochel is not the one who prevented the Nigzal from getting back his object. Meaning, the Gazlan, the first guy, had no intention of returning it. But if he's Gozel, Al Menas LaHachil, which means he had no intention of taking it for himself, then, as far as he's concerned, he might return it to the Bialim. But then the Ochel steps into the picture, and he actually eats it in such a way that it's never going to get back to the Bialim. Then the Ochel is Chayav. So he says the following. In our sugya, if we assume that the Rishon was Gozel, not Litzorach Atzmo, but rather Litzorach Acherim, So therefore, as far as his selfish interest is concerned, he could easily return it to the Baalim. Then the Sheni, by eating it, is the one who makes it impossible for it to go back to the Baalim. He's going to be Chayav. Here, let me fast forward to the third line. You see what it says, Aval Sugyan? Yes, on the third line? I'm on Kuf Lamed Ches, sorry. I'm hopping back and forth, so you're getting confused. He says, Aval Bisugyan Shed Natal Kidei Litein Lechavero. So as far as he's concerned, he would return the object. His goal is only to feed his friend. If his friend won't eat it, then Fafalan, you know, the ball game is over. He might as well return. V'ilu Loaya Notal Mimenu. You know, no to men, it doesn't mean physically to take it by his hand. He means if he wouldn't agree to eat it, because it was the original motzi, the original gozel was interested in him eating it. If he decides I refuse, I'm not interested in eating this, then as far as the gozel is concerned, I maxil abailam. He would, you know, he'd be happy to bring it to return it to its owner. In this case, even the Baal Amor would agree that the Ochel is chayv. When does the Baal Amor say the Ochel is patur? That's only in the case of Gozel Litzorach Atzma. Gozel Litzorach Atzma was considered a complete gzela. And what the Ochel is doing, just by complying and swallowing, that's not enough to be machayev him in a case where the Gozel is going to guarantee that he never gets it back. Why? Because the Gozel wants him for himself. Again, why is he feeding it to someone else when he wants it for himself? I don't know. But whatever the mitzvah is ein hasheni shalachal mafsid labayim. That's the chiddush of the Baal Amor. That since the Rishon is interested in maintaining ownership over this object, the sheni is not considered a mafsid labayim, right? Because as far as the Baal Amor's perspective is concerned, the labayim are never going to get it back, even if the ochel decides not to eat the ochel, because the gazel wants it for himself. But now we can come back to our sugya.
He's going to apply
the principle of the Ri, because again, he's not willing to take the Gozel and remove him from the scene here, because he only wants to destroy it, and he's not interested in Litzorach Atzmo, because he's going out like Reb Chaim, who understands that we have a broader definition of Gozlan, which includes even Almanas Li'avid, and we're assuming that by feeding it, that's called an act of Ibud. So hence the Rishon would also be Chayim. Now the question is, but can we reconcile our sugya with the Baal Amor? Forget about Rashi. Rashi says that the Gozel is completely off the hook, right? That we're in trouble with that, because for sure the Gozel is going to be Chayim, whether it's if he's taking it for himself or he's taking it for someone else, it makes no difference.
But once he makes the definition of who's Chayim, who is the one who's preventing the nigzal from getting it back?
Right.
And if the one of the ochel didn't want it, and he's saying the gazan would give it back under that scenario, why is the gazan chayv when the ochel eats it?
According to Chaim,
according to Mishnah Rowan. What I mean?
Ain't no chidami.
But he says af ochel chayv.
Well, no. When he says af ochel chayv, that's on the top line.
No, it's on the fifth one.
The fifth line, okay, just 1 second. Aval b'sugyan, are we up to our sugya? Okay, I was about to get to that. So, aval b'sugyan, kishin notal kidei litin l'chavero, v'ilu lo ayin notu menu ayin machsu l'vailim, is afa ochel chayim. In other words, there's definitely a kinyan gzela on the part of the gozel, right, on the part of the motzi. Then that's upgrade. In other words, that's set in stone. He's going to be chayim if he doesn't return it to the vailim. Correct?
Well, if we hold it, then we always have a problem with Rashi with this. Rashi.
Correct. Okay. So we're not gonna square with Rashi. At this point, he's sort of adding a little bit of a closed paragraph. What he's saying is that although we haven't yet come up with a pshat in Rashi, but let's ask a more fundamental question. Can we interpret our Gemara according to the Baal Amor? So the Baal Amor is gonna assume that the Gazlan who took it out of the Rishus, he's definitely chayv mishum gzeil if he can't return it to the owner. But the Baal Amor wants to know, what about our sugya that says the ochel is chayv? Right? How's the Baal Amor going to tolerate that? Because the Baal Amor claims that the ochel is not chayv.
So this is the scenario.
And this is going to be the difference. When does the Baal Amor say the ochel is not chayv? That's because we assume that the object is lost as far as the nigzal is concerned. So the decision of the ochel to eat it, it doesn't in any way impact on the nigzal. It doesn't cause him to lose his object. Masha Enkin, in the case of our sugya, why is the ochel going to be chayav? Because we're talking about a case of notel lo litzarch atzmo el achila l'acher, which he's claiming would, you know, as far as satisfying the needs and the desires of the gazlan, he'd be willing to return it. Now the ochel makes the decision that he's going to eat it. At that point, it becomes irretrievable, and therefore he's chayav as well.
But he's saying that if this case became before the Yom Basin, yeah, they'd say the ochel, okay, ochel, we don't know whether to make you chayav yet for what you did. So they're going to turn to the gozel and say, would you have given it back had he not eaten it? He says, I would have given it back. Then they turn to the ochel and say, now you chayav.
Right.
How can you make the ochel chayav for the machshav of the nigzal?
Well, again, let's assume, again, in the next shot, in the next shot, maybe they're not in cahoots, but let's assume, for argument's sake, this was all worked out. In other words, again, I don't know if, I can't tell you whether the ochel paid off the gazlan, you know, and he was a hired hitman, that I don't know, but somehow they were in cahoots, the ochel, you know, asked the gazlan to do the dirty work for him, you know, put on the gloves and go out and steal something and feed it to him. So in that case, as far as the gazlan is concerned, it's lomayel lomor, he doesn't have any vested interest in whether it goes to him or to him. And therefore, it's the ochel who clinches it, and he would therefore be chayav. That doesn't exonerate the gazlan, because again, even if he was gozel without any interest whatsoever, just to have the object go up in smoke, he would still be chayav as a gazlan. Again, if we assume like Reb Chaim. So that's why I think he says in the last line, he says, "V'ulam divrei Rashi b'sugyan lo yisyashu l'fisa," because we're assuming that in a case where the gazlan was only interested in lahatil but not litzarch atzmo, they would both be chayav. Rotsu mizegover. Hence, we're back into the turf of the Ri against Rashi. So how do we explain Rashi? Sharei l'daito, meaning l'das Rashi, lo nischayev l'koin klu. Okay, he's talking not about the case of Chelev, but the case of Truma, and the one who stole the Truma to feed the Truma to someone else, according to Rashi, is not chayev at all. And that can't be. Again, if we go like Reb Chaim. So again, Rabbi Osei, before we move on to the next answer to explain Rashi, we're going to just put on the back burner the possibility that if we don't accept Reb Chaim, if we go with the simple pshat of the Rashba in Masech Gittin, then we do have a way of explaining Rashi here, that why is lo avi v'lo mili, that's not a kinyan gzela, because he's only interested in destruction of the object. He has no kinyan meshicha, so to speak. He has no gravitational pull to the object for his own sake, which does seem to be the sheet of the Rashba, unless we're going to say that shiny nisokayai, right?
Nisokayai. And Rashi holds he's not a mazik either. He's absolutely did nothing, because Rashi used a double.
Right, because it's matzilat dure, right? That's what Rashi puts all the emphasis here on matzilat dure. And if it's matzilat dure, then if somebody else decides to swallow it, that's go sue him for damages. Don't sue me for damages.
But we had a problem with that, because that's the whole parsha of Hashem as a gzeila. The Yeshiva is a gzeila shel gazal. It's always Mati Laduri when you haven't destroyed it yet. Yet the Torah says you're gazal.
But only if you made a kin.
Only made a kin.
Yeah. That's the way it works. If I move your objects around, here, there, and elsewhere, I'm not chay. Again, maybe B'din Shammai may be chayv, I don't know, morally, ethically, you know what I'm saying? I keep emphasizing, I wouldn't give shishi for that. But if I take your object, right, according to the Rashba, if Al Pshat and the Rashba is correct, and he tried to reconcile the Rashba with Reb Chaim, but if Al Pshat and the Rashba is correct, then when I take your object out of your Rishus, I'm not a gazlan, unless I have a kinyan. Normally, in the absence of any proof to the opposite, that is a kinyan. That means I took it out of your rishus. Does say it's a kinyan, and I'm a gazlan. The exception to the rule is going to be where it was al manas lahazik, and then I'm not a gazlan. Now, could you sue me for damages as a mazik? Well, maybe it's Gromit bin Ezekiel, but it's certainly not a Mazik. Comes along somebody else, and he destroys it. It makes it impossible for the other for the Bala Chavitz to get his object back. He's the Mazik. Go sue him. So if I put it in a place which is Motzi Ladure, and I had no intention of taking it for myself, I'm not a Goslin, I'm not a Mazik yet because it's Motzi Ladure, he's the one. Go sue him for that. Which would be a fascinating understanding of Rashi. Yeah.
I don't understand. There seems to be a disconnect here somewhere. When you take something and you're not doing it for yourself, you want to destroy it or you want to give it to somebody else, you're not a Goslin because why? Because
you get no benefit from the object.
But we're assuming that the world is assuming that the world is made of Meshugoyim. So everybody does it for a reason. He has his own benefit.
So it's
always going to be La'atzmo, because whatever it is, even if it's only Hanov giving it, or the Hanov seeing
it destroyed. Maybe Thomas Hanov,
seeing it destroyed.
He owes me one.
There's always going to be some reason he's doing it.
You're right. You're correct, Alan. This whole discussion that we started yesterday, and we're about to finish it now, is based on a very, shall I say, theoretical assumption or scenario or premise that a person could actually steal something and have no vested interest. Because kinyan means permanence. Again, we do have a kinyan lizman and a kinyan al-manas lahashir, al-manas lahatsir, and a kinyan al-akhalamit, and all. We do have all those cases. But whatever they are, within a certain period of time, you know, for the 30 days until I have to cough it up, it's mine. It's totally mine. Like, let me ask you the following question. If I take something out of your rishus,
right,
and I have no intention of benefiting from it, it's not, I don't consider it mine in any sense. Well, maybe I'm helping somebody out by bringing it closer to him because he's embarrassed to go in and take it from your table, right? Yes. Would you say that I could be magdish that object? In order to be magdish something or to sell something, you need full-fledged kinyanim. This is a funny kind of case. You know, I lifted up your object from your table and I put it here, right? And it's out of your shoes. And now I'm going to call up my friend Yosef and I'm going to say, Yosef, here, you take it, you know. So can I be magdish the object? So one philosophy says, well, I took it out of your shoes, so I'm a Goslin. Period. You know, you had possession of it, now it's out of your domain. The other approach says, wait a minute, where's the kinyan that makes it mine? Well, the God, I don't want to say mine because that makes me to the Goslin, right? Where did the Goslin acquire ownership on it? If he's not in any way interested in it for his own purpose. There's no permanence to his action other than, in a sense, he's like a long arm on behalf of the person who's going to enjoy the benefit of it. Well, the idol that's going to get worshipped, right? But other than that, he's not benefiting from it. So here you have really a pull in two different directions. You have one direction is the sugya of Zorik Matvea Shel Chaver Liyam. Or, for example, the Shliach in Varvera, where presumably the Shliach gave, he doesn't have any interest in taking this object. He is not going to wave the flag, oh, this is my cloak. He's just simply giving it back to the Mishaleah. So is that called a Kenyan? Very hard pressed to call it a Kenyan. But what do we do with all these cases of Goslin Amanas Lamit, which the Gemara says is a Goslin? But if you take the Rashba in the case of Manasseh in Shmuel, he's insisting that he doesn't have Kinyan Gzela. So Kinyan Gzela are also a kind of a Kinyan. You know, again, the same kind of Chakir that we had before. You have something called Kinyan Gzela. Do I subsume that under the halachas of Kinyan? Or does it work with its own mechanism? And it's not an application, a pratch of a klal, but rather it's a yotzev and a klal. And now we have new definitions of kavanas gzela. You took it out of its rishus, you're a Goslin. I don't care. You have kinyan gzela. The nafkimi is going to be chai for onsim. And not only that, he's in his shina gaze, he makes an absolute acquisition of it, such that there's no chiva shalva. I mean, that's saying a lot. Or a kinyan gzela, a whole new entity.
To some extent, it looks like the Torah, through this sugya, is giving us a definition of what is your relation to your possessions. The Torah doesn't recognize, in general, doesn't recognize your objects as your objects to the exclusion of someone being able to move them. I mean, in other words, in our world thinking, something's mine, don't touch it, right? I give you a right to touch it. Yeah? Right. But in Torah's views, no, you can touch all you want until you have Kavana to be a Gosling. Right. You can play with
right.
my
you're
stuff.
Innocent
you
until you become a Gosling. Right.
But it's my stuff. Why is right. the Torah recognized as being mine?
So again, if you're talking ethically, I'm not sure, but if you're talking monetarily, I mean, then the Torah goes through laws of Kinyanim. And as long as it's your object, whether it's inside the corral or it's outside the corral, it still remains yours. And to sue a person for payment, you know, to compensate someone for the loss of his object, he needs kinyanim. And until he gets kinyanim, then certainly morally and ethically, he's a bum, you know, and we have to tar and feather him. But
so if he's sitting at a table and he's eating your food. And then he's kind of full, so he wraps the rest of one on his plate to take home. The Baal didn't have an intention for him to take anything home, so he's a gosling.
Yeah, because he intends to eat it or feed his family. Right? But if he intends to throw it into the yard, now we have a real serious issue. Is that doesn't really sound like kinyana. Or should we say no? In Hilchus Zeil, you're a Gosling. So Chaim comes up with this very complicated definition in which we're going to wait until we see that you eat it or you feed it to someone. You know, and then the final hezek is now going to clinch the Zeil. So we have the Rambam in Hilchus Kedeva about somebody who steals the Kli and then he breaks the Kli. And the Rambam says he's a Ganav, and not only that, he's going to pay Kefil Kishas Shrir. And Reb Chaim sees that a whole new philosophy on how Zeil operates.
And if it's food and it goes bad on its own,
then Reb Chaim is going to say that's like the case of Nisuf according to the Rashba, which is Ezek Shein Nikar, or the case of the Yerushalmi of the Listim, where he doesn't actively destroy the object. So it's interesting because in the case of Matbea, he has the object in his hand and he throws it actively into the yam. Now again, you might argue that's also like a Hezek Shein Nikar, but if you assume that's Hezek Nikar, it's like Zuta Shel Yam, which is Avuda Menem Mikol Adam, then Reb Chaim says, head to your Gosling. Very interesting. So again, Reb Oskar, I'm not claiming that you're going to walk out of here and be a Bucky and Hilch Gzela. The Rav spent about, I think, 6 months on Gzela, trying to define Gzela. I mean, it's my mistake. Two prakim and shas. They're just dedicated to trying to define what a goslin is. And the truth is, it's way beyond those two prakim. I remember I was learning kiddushin, major sugyas about what shinui is and what, you know, what kinyanim are and very complicated, you know, gzela. You know, I put my shiurim up on YU Torah and they have what's called categories. And you're meant to categorize your shiur. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that this way people are looking for shiur on a certain topic, they have easy access. And I think it's a very friendly site, you know, why you told. But guess what? They don't have Gzela. Gzela is not on the list. And I'm telling you, if you're a Magid Shir, I don't care if you're saying it Daf Yomi, I don't care what kind of Shir you're saying it Shas, Bafli, and probably Shalmi. Gzela is like left, right, and center. And when you think about it, the whole concept of Kinyani Gzela, I don't know if there's any legal system in the world that has a concept that parallels Kinyani Gzela. What do you mean Kinyani Gzela? It's yours, it's not mine. Just because I decided to abscond with your object, I get Kinyani on it? I can encash that the Shvach goes to me? Imagine the cow gives birth, the Vlad is mine, because I'm a Gosling. Is there a legal system that would? I don't know. I'm not a bucky in law. I mean, I took a couple of years of constitutional law. That's not going to help me. But well, a man steals something and it goes up in value. He gets the increment again. If there were kinyanim, I'm not trying to oversimplify the laws of Gzela. But just the very idea that could cross your mind that a Gosling could, you know, it's called a chotei niskar on an ethical level. Who are you? You're a scoundrel. And for that, the vlad is going to be yours? You get to be the giza, you know, the sheep grows wool, and now it's your wool. Why? Because you're a gosling. And the Gemara has sugyas where he takes the wool, and he colors it, he dyes the wool, and now he owns the wool because he dyed it. Does it make any sense? In other words, you know, the Torah takes Gzela and puts it into Dini Mominus and asks questions of Kinyanim. You know, the Gazan has Kinyanim. I remember the first time I heard about Kinyanim Gzela, I thought it was probably a high school freshman or something. I didn't understand what they were talking about. What's Kinyan Gzela? Either it's yours or it's not yours. You can't have Kinyan just because you decided to take someone's object. Isn't it mind-boggling when you think of that? I don't know. I'm not a bucky in law, but if you could ask Google, I don't know if Google will give you an answer, but is there a legal system in the world that recognizes anything that's remotely reminiscent of Kinyan Gzela? I
don't know. No, it isn't, because the one that seems the most paradoxical that always did it for me when I was younger was you take something that you wanted, you weren't willing to buy it from the man. He refuses to sell it to you. Right. So what you do is you steal it and you make a shinui. And now
it's yours.
Now it's yours. Now the guy says, okay, I want it back, even with the shinui.
Fly kite. Go fly kite. You're lucky if you get its value, because you might even not get its value. You might get its original value, but not its enhanced value if it went up in price.
Seems very strange.
Isn't it odd? Like the whole concept. I remember when I first heard about it in high school.
Steal a lot of commodities that are going to go up in value. Return them all, but at the original value, and you live off the profit. Great business idea.
Right. Steal sheep, and it's great. Go figure that out.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? It's on an emotional, intuitive level. That's what I always say about halacha. Halacha works within a world of its own. It's a logical world, but it's not human logic. I mean, John and I just learned this sugya today. I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, this is a little... it's about Torah, but it's not really about Torah because it's Torah. I'm going to ask you a question that John and I had today in the sugya in later on in the Septic Sugas. The Gemara wants to classify chayvei misos. I mean, there are many capital crimes in the Torah. The Gemara wants to separate it into what's called chamuros and kalos. Kalos with a kuf. And the Gemara wants to say that in the Havamina, because of we're trying to justify a special pasuk, that in the case of misos kalos, you can redeem yourself by paying a fact check, and you will not be chayvei misos, so to speak. You get yourself off the hook. And a habamina. That's why the Torah needed an extra pasuk. So what's misos kalos? So I'm going to ask you the following question. Here's case A and case B. You tell me which is kala, which is chom. Okay? Case A, a man kidnaps someone and sells them as an eved. Case B, a man murders somebody. Which is chom or which is kala? What would you say?
That's a chom, being the one who kills somebody.
One who kills somebody. I'll give you another two. The same. Case A, a man wounds his father. Rahman al-Islam. Capital case, and a man kills someone. Which is chal and which is chom?
We fall into the same trap again.
Same trap. I mean, obviously. Here's where the halacha has a logic of its own. Murder is considered a misa chal. Why? Because the Torah says if you do it b'shogeg, you go to an Eir Mikloh. That's called a misa shebishigigasam niteres l'kapara. But Mashenkin, if you wound your father, if you kidnap someone, you sell it, and if you did it b'shogeg, there's no kapar. Can't bring a karma chatz. You'll fry in the next world as a shogeg. I mean, whatever it is. So the Gemara says, therefore, those cases are called misa chamur. When you steal somebody and you sell them, or you wound your father. Can you figure that out? So somebody would, I don't know what they do in, Korea? Where are they studying Talmud, apparently? A couple of Koreans, probably. Yeah, the whole thing is probably in Oiskoblos and Iowa. It's probably one, five Koreans somewhere in a basement, subterranean studying Talmud. If not, I want to apply for a job. Maybe they'll pay me good money. I don't know how much the Korean dollar is worth, Maybe I can teach in, over the internet. I don't know.
Maybe they think they can become a Balkari, maybe.
Very good, a Balkari. Very good. Korea's a Balkari. So you tell a Korean, who's learning Talmud that he thinks the Talmud is great because that's the Jewish mind, the Yiddish cup. You tell him that murder is called in the Gemara in Subis on Daf Lamed Zayin, you can look it up, a Misa Kal. And wounding your father is a misa chamur. And the Havamina in the Gemara was that you can redeem your misa in the case of murder, but you can't redeem it in the case of wounding your father. I rest my case. I mean, it's a whole different logical system. It's logical within the rules of the game. You know, so if you talk about Shigugosam, the Teres Kapar, ain't Shigugosam, the Teres Kapar, you know what I'm saying? But it's not intuitively logical. I mean, you try to sell that anywhere, they'll throw you out on your head. You know, they'll be right to do it.
Right.
It's amazing. I mean, then Kinyon Gzeila is another example of something that's not intuitively logical, you know. I want to finish this because I actually prepared a shiur for you for today on the page that we have here, number Kof Mem Gimel. So let's just finish this with Derech Nosef. So now we have to offer another possibility for Rashi. The Sugyan Mairi Kigon Shatochev Sober Shu Shalom. Okay then? Now, where is the source for this exception to the rule of Kinyon Gzeila? Meaning, if I mistakenly take an object which belongs to you, thinking it belongs to me, I'm not a Gazlan. Where is that? So that's also a sugi ksubus. As I tell you, that the third pair of ksubus is much like Shas Kotel. And the Gemara says the following. Let's call him Reuven, right? Reuven borrows a cow.
What?
Borrows a cow. Show it.
A cow.
And he dies. Chanof ben Reuven has no clue that this Elsie, the cow, belongs to Yenna. Right, he thinks it's his father, and he inherited it. So he goes ahead, and he's on a vacation during after Tisha B'Av, and he's up in the Tzimmer Darton, and they take the cow, they shech the cow, and they have steak dinner. So the Gemara says he's not a gosman. Why? Because kasav shalaviyam haya v'tavchua v'achlua. He thought that it was his cow because he inherited it from his father. Little did he know, unbeknown to him, that it belonged to someone else. And Gemara says there's what's called a chiv hanah, okay, dmei boss of his own. That's a sugya to it. So the Imre Moshe wants to suggest that that's pshat now in Rashi. The man feeds his friend Truma, thinking that this Truma belongs to him. I don't know if he thought he was a Kayan, that's that, I don't know. Or in the case of Chalif, he thought it was his Chalif. And he's not a Gazlan. I feel that this is a real push. You know, to push this into Rashi, Rashi says, Lo Ovid Velo Midi, based on the fact that he simply didn't know that it was stolen goods that he was stealing. I don't know. I think that's a bit of a kvetch, but that's what he wants to. That's what he wants to suggest. Mishum hachi chayv ha'ochel, right? Because the gazlan is not chayv mishum gzeila. He doesn't know that it's his. So the ochel knows that he's stealing someone else's chelev or truma. Is the vizeh asi shafi divrei Rashi? To steal a kishita sa balamor, right? We go back to the balamor, and the balamor says that either the ochel is going to be chayev, right? The ochel is going, but the ochel is normally not chayev because there's already someone who stole it. But if we neutralize the gazlan and he's not chayev as a gazlan, then the ochel would be chayev. Hence, Rashi holds that in this case that the Gazlan had no awareness of the fact that it wasn't his, he's not Chai Mishum Gazlan, and if the Ochel is, it becomes the Gazlan.
He says,
and I'm pretty sure this is the Imre Moshe. Yes, the Imre Moshe. Yeah,
he says, Shei lo ken lo hayam mechayev ha'ochel tehotza'ad de Gazlan bu.
Where are you? Just one second.
Right at the end of where you just were.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. For instance, on page Kuf Lamed Tes. That's what you're reading? Right. Right, because again, the thesis of the Balamor is that the Ochel is not Chayv if there's a Gazlan. But if there's no Gazlan, i.e., the Gazlan has no clue that this object is being stolen, then in such a case, once we neutralize the gazlan, then shuv hadra kusha l'dukta, now the ochel is chayav. That's the balmor. Right? So if you ask me whether the ochel is chayav, it all depends upon whether there's a previous gazlan or chayav. So now, if we can neutralize the gazlan, then the male of the ochel would be chayav. That's what he's saying in the name of the Imre Moshe. So he points out in the footnote, that's number Reish here, that according to this interpretation of Imre Moshe, we have to assume that the Ochel knows that it's stolen goods, because if not, he's not a Gazlan either. Okay, and then now he's going to embark on a discussion about Mazik. But before we get to that, maybe we'll pick that up tomorrow. I would just like to fast forward to Kuf Mem Gimel. Now, until now we've been analyzing the sugya of Matzi Ladure. But the Gemara also had another alternative which it rejected, and that's Lo Matzi Ladure. And Gemara says if it's Lo Matzi Ladure, then there's no way that Kim Leib Deramine is even a Halamin here in the sugya. We're trying to come up with the case of Kim Leib Deramine. Well, Kim Leib Deramine means he would have been Chayiv except for, but here he wouldn't have been Chayiv because it was Lo Matzi Ladure. And Rashi identifies this as Anus. Because again, if Shimon is placing it down the throat of Reuven in such a way that Reuven can't even cough it up, then it's going to go down his throat, through his esophagus, down to his belly, and that's onus. And Tosis is not happy with this. Tosis says, why didn't the Gemara come up with the following case? Luki kigon shebirtsono meniach lo litcho. Okay, so it's lo matzi laduri. So what? But let's say Shimon was commissioned by Reuven, Reuven's the ochel, to place it down his throat. You know, can you imagine chas v'shalom, someone who's mishutak, how do you say it in English? You know, he has no use of his arms and so forth.
Paralyzed.
Excellent. Let's say someone's paralyzed, right? So what does he do? He tells the nurse to put it down his throat.
Yeah.
Now, if he can't swallow it, you know, this again. Today we have more sophisticated means of feeding someone, you know, intravenous feeding. But if you didn't have intravenous feeding, so Tos says in such a case, Mirtzono meniach lo litcho is now he's definitely chayev misa, even if it's lo matzi ladure. Again, I think he means misa v'day shamayim, right? Because we're talking about chelev, or we're talking about a chiyuv kares in the case of. In Chela we're talking about Achiv Kares, in Shua we're talking about Achiv Misa Bidei Shamayim. So we're talking about Bezin Shalmala, Bidei Shamayim, and if a man tells someone else, you know, to put the Chela down his throat, then he is Chayav Misa for eating Chela. Again, he didn't actually actively eat the Chela, but it doesn't matter. So even if it's Afagatul Amotzi Ladure, nevertheless he'd be Chayav. I'm a little bit confused here because the premise of Tosfos would be that he'd be chayav not only misa v'day shamayim, but he's also chayav as a mazik. Hence, we apply the principle of kibbutz gramini. I'm not sure why he's a mazik in such a case. I don't know. You have to know more about Yishom Mishum Chitza for that. You follow my question? If I commission you to put something down my throat, am I chayav mishum mazik? I don't know. It's a little bit confusing to me because you need a Maisa Hezek to be Chayav as a Mazik. I don't know where the Maisa Hezek here is. And it's Lo Matzi Ladure. You know, he has no way of coughing it up. So there's one piece of the puzzle that I have to fill in here. But the Tosa Rush elaborates on Tosus and he says the fine kasha. Nehi da anasu v'lo matzi ladure. Even if we accept Rashi, that since Lo Matzi Ladure is an anus, but Baha, in this case, he's not an honest. Why? Because he could have told his friend, don't do it. He was actually a very compliant, you know, he was in full compliance here as a partner. And his friend would not be Tokhim Tok Pib. Umilsa the Pshiti Shim Hel Chilo Adam Dover Osir Chayav Kilahu Aksmo Paya Ochlan Hoil Venen. This is not Poshut. This is the Tosa Rush. And on this claim of the Tosa Rush, which is really the claim of Tosa, we can have an entire essay. What happens if a man benefits from Achila, he has the Hanoah, But there was no maisa achila because somebody else shoved it down his throat. Yes. So we have a principle of misasek b'chalavim v'arayos. Remember that?
Misasek
b'chalavim v'arayos. Is chayav shekein men. So what does that mean, chayav shekein men? In other words, he didn't do a maisa ver of eating chalev. As far as he's concerned, it was shuman. And he's being chayav. Again, he has to bring a carbon, whatever he's chayav for. Where's the maisa achila? He had no idea it was chayav. Mm-hmm. That's called misase. In Kol HaTarku, that would not be a maisa. A man blows the shofar because he thinks he's getting the clogging thing out of the shofar. That's not shofar. That's not a maisa tkiyah. If a man is unaware of his actions, then that's called misasik. It's not called a maisa achila. It's not called a maisa vera. So this man is, in the case of misasik, is not doing it. A man thinks he's having a relationship with his wife, and lo and behold, it turns out to be his sister. So in such a case, he's chayev. Why is he chayev? Isn't that a classical case of misasik?
She came in.
Oh, in Chalovim v'arayos. Chalovim is just representative of Machol Sasuris. You're chayef ha-noas achiva, ha-noas bia, even without a maisa. That seems to be the premise of the Tosa Rosh. Mukach l'chor midivrayim, k'mo shekosvu ha-achronim. Okay, he quotes Rav Elchanan, Rav Yosef Engel, Rav Yaakov Breish, and this and that. He quotes all these achronim. The Isra achila, when it comes to Machol Sasuris or arayos, lo damu l'shari surim. But also what we're learning now is something really fundamental. Hasam, in the case of shari surim, ha Yisrael ha'adam shelo yase maise. So every other avera, with the exception of arayos and achila, is the maise avera that generates the chiyuv. Avol b'chalovim arayos ha'anahi ha'isa. We define the isa as the anah. That Torik Pida Shalo Yikabel Haguf Hano Michalovim Varayos. This is Rabbi Elchanan. Vilachain Chayav Bahem or Chiev Bahem Amis Asik Mitav Shekain Men. Mashenki Mishari Surim. If you don't have a Maisa and you were Misase, you're not Chayav. We once had a long discussion, I think it was here in this room, about misasik on Shabbos and Melech HaShabbos, and we said that it could be that in Shabbos there's a separate halacha of misasik because of Melech HaShabbos. And even if it would not qualify as misasik and call it Tarkula, in other words, he wanted to pick up this mechuber, but he picked up this mechuber instead, he would still be partner in Shabbos, right? Because there's another requirement in Melech HaShabbos. But certainly in a case where he thought it was Talush and it turned out to be mechuber, that's misasik, and he doesn't have to bring a carbon for that. There's no violation even b'shogeg. So that's called shari surim. But in chelev, the iser is the hanah. Is mishum hachi. Now we understand the Tosa Rosh. That mischayev kishetochav lo chaver b'ritzono, if he commissioned his friend to shove it down his throat, and now he has the hanah from me'ayim, is that's considered misasik without a maisa avera, and yet he's chayv, of course, that no afamishena osu shum maisa. The maisa is not related to him, it's related to the tochev, but nevertheless, he gets benefit from it, and that hano itself, it would generate a chiyuv. The only thing that bothers me here is that the Gemara in Krisus is talking about a korban chatas. So if you eat chalev, why did the Gemara mention chalev and not nevela, treifa, whatever? Because chalev generates a chiyuv karis, and therefore the b'shogeg yechayev a karban. So the Gemara says yechayev a karban even without a maisa because he had the anah. What would the Gemara say that he's chayev malchus in such a case? I would call it a lav shein bo maisa. It was lo motzi ladure, if you follow me. Now here we're discussing a chiyuv bidei adam. Are we not? I mean, we're talking about kidei rishos, so we're talking about kimlei rabbinei. Just 1 second, unless he's talking. Yeah, and then Mazik, just 1 second. He has to reimburse the coin. I don't get it. I'm lost. Help me out here. Maybe that's the next paragraph. I don't remember. I'm lost because we're talking about reimbursing the coin. So what are you going to tell me? She came nene? Shekeinen is enough to reimburse, force him to reimburse the coin. If not, for Kimle Drabmin. Are you following me? He has an overlap of two chiyuvim. So again, as far as Misa B'dei Shamayim for Zara Shachol Truma, I understand that Shekeinen, and he set it up. He deliberately asked the guy to put it down his throat. But as far as the chiyuv Mammon to pay the coin, I mean, wouldn't that be Grumav and Ezekiel? Maybe the one who fed him is not chayv because he doesn't know that it belongs to the coin, etc., etc. But he knew well, and therefore he's chayv to pay. But he's quoting the halacha of Shekeinen. Is that because of Shekeinen? Just 1 second. If you assume you need a Maisa Hezek, so where's the Maisa Hezek? The answer is yes, no. Ah, I see. He's learning, I think he's learning the following. When I say he, it's a whole list of acronym. It's not shot that Shekeinen and the Hanoh alone is Machayev him, but rather the Hanoh is Machayev him because the Hanoh is considered like a Maisa. Why do I say that? Because if we're going to say that Hanoh is considered like a Maisa, like a Nivellus, for example, right? The Gemara says in Bava Kama that it says V'nichrusa nefashos ha'osos, that she's also considered a nefashos ha'osos, even though she doesn't have a Maisa, because she has Hanoh. So that Hanoh makes her into an Osa Maisa. Hence, you could be chayev to pay the kohen tashlume nezikim because it's as if you did a maisa hezek. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking out loud. The uam haflokan beer betaimam the hachazin de bechol arayis mushoras. Oh, that's the gemara above the kama mushoras anoshim kan noshim afukav the isha karka olam. Well, I'm not sure she's always karka olam, but let's say she's karka olam. Below of the Maisa. So what's the answer? That she has Hanoh. Elokeinu deberitzona osa, right? She was a consenting partner. Is Karina Bava Nikusu Anafashsa Osos. Is the Afla helping us or hurting us? Is he asking Akasha or is he supporting what we said? Hokinami Bechelev, I forgot the law of the Maisa. We call Kevin Son of Chayev. Why? Because she came then. I mean, I don't know else. He doesn't mention I know it. Become an osul suyu bavu kam. Fine. But in yichatos umalkes, but actually, I know the mice still feed var beishlam dafilu the mice achili gufa isu kogom. Ah. Oh, I see what he's saying. He's saying that flaw is not. Is not reflecting what we saw in the other Achronim. Because in the other Achronim we saw that the Hanoh itself is the Machayev. The flaw is learning something else. That all you need is Ratzon. Mm-hmm. Just 1 second. How is that different than the Achronim? The Achronim are saying that what? That he has Hanoh. And the flaw is saying because of its Birtzona. But what does he mean? As far as what? He's talking about Halov Varayis, right?
You mean the Kavanasa part?
The Kavanasa Lusugi Baba Kava. Right. The Linia Chatzamakas Chayim Monachle La No Kemaisa.
Monachle La No Kemaisa. So he's not talking about Hano here. So maybe the. The Machshava, the Ratzon, is what is equal to Hana in his mind.
I don't know.
We would like to
because look at the next line. He says,
right.
He says, "Lefid Vav Yeshlam Dafilu Inayim De Maisa Achila Gufa Isur." Not the way we said it before. That the Hana is the Gufa Isur, right? Do we have in the previous paragraph the Hana is the Gufa Isur? Let's see if we find it. Let's underline those three words. In the paragraph of Mucha. Yeah? If you underline those three words, now compare it to the following words. He says, Afilu inema de maisa achila hu gufa isu. Do you hear? He's setting it up here, the Mishkanos Aroim, that there are two answers to the question about why misasek the halovim is chayev, chalov arayis. One answer is because the gufa isur is the hanoh, and that he certainly benefited from. He enjoys the achil, he enjoys the bilas erva. The second approach, which he attributes to the haflah, is not that the Hana is the Gufa Yisur. No, the Maisachi was the Gufa Yisur, but here it's considered he did a Maisachi. Why? Because of Birtzon. I'm much more comfortable with the first approach. I mean, that's the way I was always brought up, you know. I wouldn't have said that this is considered like a Maisa. But he does have an argument based on the Gemara of Noshin. I mean, you know, the Nivalos in Arayas. Because Gemara says in Bava Kamma that the reason why the Nivalos is Chayav, and she gets all, you know, all the punishments, including Kares, is because she's considered a Nefesh Ha'osa. Right? The Torah says, V'nichusu ha'nefesh ha'osos, and the plural of the word osos is coming to be Marba the Isha. So he's saying that the Ritzona equals Ma'aseha. It's considered Osa, Nefesh Ha'osos, because of her Ritzona. That's not flow. It's a pretty good argument, but that's not the simple pshat in the Gemara Krisus, that it's chai because of Kenen. You know, Kenen, no, that doesn't mean because she Kenen Hoyev Ritzona. Now, as far as our sugya is concerned, is there any difference between the two approaches? Let's see. Rashi says that in Lo Motzi Ladure, he's an Anu, Satosa Rosh, arguing against Rashi that since he commissioned his friend to do this, he's Chayav. So one pshat is because he has the Hana, that it goes down his belly. The other way of understanding is because he sets up the Achila Mirtzono, even though he was totally passive. So we're going to convert passivity to activity, if you follow what I mean. The Torah is going to consider someone who's passive to have been active because of his Ratzon, and that applies in two areas, in Arayos and in Machol Sasuos. So either way, we have a lot of trouble with Rashi here, because Rashi says that if it's Lo Motzi Ladure, he's an Anus. L'chora, the concept of onus here is not relevant since it was done birtsona. Ah, just one second, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Rashi's not learning that it was done birtsona, that he commissioned him. No, Tosis is asking, why did the Gemara have to come on to say that what? That he's an onus because... Why did Gemara reject the possibility of Tachav Lo Bebeis Aviv Lo Motzi Ladur because he's an Anus? Why did the Gemara just say that since he wanted a Mirtzono, therefore he's not considered an Anus? Which is either the exceptional rule in the case of the Chalavim Shekein Nene, or because the Torah considered Mirtzono to be as if he did the Maisach Hila, and therefore the Gemara could simply solve the problem of Lo Motzi Ladur. Okay, he's saying Lo Motzi Ladur, but what does it make? He commissioned it to do it, and therefore he's chayav, and hence we need Kimle the Rami. That's the kasha Tosfos, and that kasha is equally difficult in the Achronim as it is in Aflah. It makes no difference if he would have commissioned his friend Shimon to put it down as Beis Abliyah below Matzladure, he would be chayav either because of Hana or because of the Torah and Shiva Kamais, the Torah made it into his mice. So that's good. Okay, now we're ready for the Rambam. But the truth is that what we're about to embark upon is not so much the Rambam, it's really the Kesef Mishnah. So the Rambam is in the 14th parak of Macholos Asuros. Ha'ochel ma'achol mi'macholos Asuros derech schok okim esaseh, which means he had no awareness whatsoever of the fact that he's eating Macholos Asuros. I'm not exactly sure what Derech Schok means. I mean, he was flipping it in his tongue and making magic or something for the children. You know, he was doing a magician act, and somehow he swallowed it. I don't know, that's Derech Schok. I'm not exactly sure.
He didn't intend to swallow.
Right, he certainly didn't intend to swallow, but I'm just wondering, what does Derech Schok mean? You know, Derek Schok usually means I was joking around with you, but that doesn't mean I ate something. So, I don't know. You'll have to come up with a case. Zok Rambam. Afal pi shalon is kavein leguf achilo. I think we would rewrite the Rambam in our terminology. We'd say, afal pi shalon is kavein lemaisa achilo. Is hoil v'nene chayav. Kemishim is kavein li'atzmo shal achilo. So again, he had no kavanah whatsoever. He's a complete misasik as far as Maisachil is concerned. But the Rambam says, as if he did have kavanah for the Maisachila, because she came in. Because she came in.
And he goes on to say...
Yeah, one second. I'll give you a minute here, because I just want to take a deep breath here and understand the ratio of the Rambam here. Just 1 second. So again, is he saying like the Afla or like the Achronim? Just stop. It interests me that the Hanno itself is the Isur. No, the Rambam says Ki'ilu Niskave. It's Ki'ilu Niskave. Just 1 second. That's... Is that the Daflo? Is Daflo again? Daflo wants to say that the Torah in these cases considered if he had Rotzon, it's as if he did the Maisa. And the Rambam is saying that Hoil Venene, Hoil Venene Chayov. So again, it's not really a Maisa Vera, Maisa Chilu, but Hano. Kimishmas kamen the atzma shalachil. Kamen the atzma shalachil. It's a little bit different here. The Rambam is talking about a case where he intentionally engaged in a maisachil, but he didn't realize what he was doing here. Says that what? That since he has Hanna, it's as if, see, the Rambam wants to set up a Maisa Achila, but I don't think this has anything to do with Afla per se. Afla says he's high because he set this up. Not that he set it up. He wasn't miscavin at all. Even according to Afla, he wasn't miscavin. Afla is only using the case of a woman in Arias to show that sometimes the Torah considers it as if you're the Osa Maisa, even though you were totally passive. And if Misasik makes you into passive, but since you wanted to eat it, is therefore it's considered as if you did a Maisa Chila. That's Afla. Why? Because you wanted to benefit from this achil. Now I'm assuming that even if it was misasik in the Rambam, he still wanted to benefit from the achil. But I don't know, there's schok, that confuses me. I wish I had a clearer picture of what the scenario that the Rambam is describing here. What exactly are the details here? That I don't know.
He's a juggler. And
he swallowed some food
and it ended up in his mouth.
So would that fit into the Afla's perspective? The Afla is saying, if I read it correctly, is that the reason why you're chayav even without a mice is because you really wanted that mice to happen. Right?
You wanted it before, or you were happy that you had it when you had the hana after?
I'll just
Everybody
read to you.
Is happy to have the Hanah.
Right. But I'll read to you the language of that flaw in the last line of the Ulam. He says, "Mikomakom kevin shemiskavim lekach ubertzono nasa hamaisa." Then he says, "Niskavim lekach." So you have kavanah for something. You didn't do the actual maisa. It was done on you or with you. Right? You were victimized, so to speak. But it's considered, since you wanted it, as if you did the maisa. I don't think that's what the Rambam is addressing here, because the Rambam is talking about a case of a ochel derech schok. So what, he wanted to eat machalas asuras?
No.
Or mesasek? It doesn't sound to me like the afla, but maybe I'm misunderstanding the afla, I don't know. Yeah, I think it would make more sense if you take the achronim, that since he has hanah, that's the gufa isur. But again, I'm still not totally satisfied, because the Rambam says Kemishim is coming li'atzma shalachilu. What does the Rambam need that for? If it's just a kenena, the Rambam should have stopped there. Quit while you're ahead. Why did the Rambam feel compelled to add Kemishim is coming li'atzma shalachilu? Oh, now we have another element in the equation. And this is where the Kesef Mishnah is gonna stand up and interpret. The Rambam writes that Hanoya Habolo li Odom al Karcho be Isur mikol Isurim im Niskavin or Simulon Niskavin Mutter.
How
about Karcho
and Niskavin go together?
He's saying the following, that if you had no choice but to walk down the street where they're burning the incense for Avodah Zorah, that's how you had to get to wherever your destination is. And guess what? The smell of the incense went into your nostrils and you're out. You can't deny that it's a great pleasure that you're gaining from the smell. So that's called Hanoah Bolo Liodom Baal Korcho. The Metzius says that he has the Hanoah, but he didn't seek it out. It was thrust upon him. So the Rambam says, in such a case, how do we gauge your relationship to this Hanoah? Says the Rambam, it depends what's in this kavanah. In other words, you know, as he's getting the smell, you know, he moves a little closer. You know, he takes a whiff. He takes an intake in his nostrils. Now that's called this kavanah. But lo niskavin mutter, because again, it was Baal Korcho. Now notice that the Rambam combines that together with the case of Shekein Nenna, of Macholos Asuros B'derech Schog O Kimis Asek. And Lechor, there's apples and oranges here in this Rambam. And I think that's what the Kesef Mishnah is bothered by. In the Reisha, the Rambam is talking about a halacha of Nenna. In the Sefer, the Rambam is talking about this kavin alone is kavin. Do you follow me? No, it's in the Reisha, the Rambam is talking about the Metzius of Hanoah. Right, something fell into his mouth, but he had Hanoah from it. And the Rambam says that Hanoah is enough to be Machayef him. Hoel v'nena chayef, says the Rambam. Now the Rambam is talking about a different issue. He's not talking about the fact that he was Nene, but he's questioning whether the Hanoah is something that he actively sought out, right? And the answer is, it depends. If it was Baal Korcho because he was going there and the Hanoah happened and thrust itself upon him, right? It was thrust upon him. That's called Baal Korcho. So then the Rambam says, it depends if he had Kavon or not Kavon. Again, having Kavon or not Kavon is not the same as Hol V'nene. Even if he didn't have kavanah, he had the hanoah for it. The question is, did he actively seek it out? The Ayin B'Kesef Mishnah, Shom Shadin HaRishon Hu Adin Sheveinu Li'el Demisasim B'Chalom HaRayis Chayv Shekein Nenev Adin HaSheni, the Sefer Ram is Hanoah Bolo Li'odah Bal Koch V'Sugiv V'Psochim Chof Heya B'Beis L'Lishna Basra D'Rova. Okay, there are a whole different Lashonos there, but in the Lishna Basu the Rav, Svirle Dehecha, the Lo Efsha become a Chavin is awesome. But if he has Kavana for the Hanoah, like we said before, he bends down, you know, to try to get as much of the whiff as he can. So in such a case, he's Chayev. Even though it was Lo Efsha, I mean, he had no other way of going. But he went out of his way to seek out the Hanoah. If, on the other hand, he just walks through without any kavanah to benefit from it, that's okay because it's lo efsha. He has no other way of getting there, wherever he has to get to.
Yeah.
Do you see what's going on here? There's one sugya increases and there's another sugya psachim. And the Kesef Mishnah is claiming that the ratio and the sefer are should be split into two. The Reish is addressing the sugya of Krisus Shekein Nenev, and even if his achila was derech schok or derech mesasek, but it came Nenev, and the sefer of the Rambam is the sugya of Psochim that addresses the issue of Hanoah Bolo Leol Bakoch, when he has to get to a certain place and he passes through the Avodah Zorah and they're cooking whatever they're cooking and he's going to smell it and benefit from the smell. So there we say it all depends. Was it Efshar, he could have gone down a different route? No, he had to go down this route. That's the way he's going to get to where he has to get to. And then the second question is going to be, well, does he miscavi? Did he bend his nose over, you know, to try to breathe in, get an intake of breath? So according to the case of Mishnah, there's no connection really between the Reish and the Sefer. They're addressing two different issues based on two different sugyas. There's one sugya called Chikei Nena, there's another sugya called Habo Hanoa Bolo Liodam Bal Karch. He says, Vehecha She'enu Miskavim. Oh, we're going to have to answer. Hecha Di'enu Miskavim. Maybe John, you open the door, we'll see if they. Vehecha Di'enu Miskavim Shari. Right, so he could have gone down a different way, but he's not in any way seeking out the hano. He's not smelling it into his nose.
That would be mutter.
And that would be mutter. Well, again, the Gemara has five different lashonos. It's one of the most complicated sugyas over there. Pesachim Chafei. I think we learned it here in this room, not that long ago. But we don't believe that Yud-Beis Kodesh is the Shir of Shichuchah. We're mockery. We say 3 months is enough for Shichuchah. But do you remember anything about the sugya there? It's a world-class sugya. So there's one day that says the only time it's mutter is if it's lo efshar v'lo kamachav. And there's one Lishon in Rava that says that if it's lo efshar, then if it was lo efshar v'lo kamachav, it's mutter. But if he had kavon, even though it was lo efshar, he didn't have another alternative route. But since he was miscavving, that's enough to be to aser. I mean, the linkage between the Reish and the Sefer is clear in the Rambam. That we're both talking about Anoah. So there's one case of Anoah where even though he was misasik, but he had Anoah. And there's another case where even though he had no other way to go, but nevertheless he was miscavving. And if he was miscavving, he wanted to have that Anoah. So the case of Mishnah says, Hecha Di'edu Miskavim Shari, Afagav Te'ef Shalom. Li'vadel Li'ayis. So he could have gone down another route.
Yeah.
It's because of the case of Mishnah, Afagav Pisha Rashi Shom Pirish, the Mayri B'Yisuri, Anok, could go Re'ach Shom Torez. Haku, Mikomu Kom Be'a Rama Mashba, the Mayri B'chol Yisurim, Afilu B'Yisuri Achila. Alright, so this is where we're going to want to put the stop here, because this is already. So Blin Eder will pick this up tomorrow. This is really classic definitions of Yisuri Hanoah and Kalov and Arayis. I mean, we skipped a few pages here, but maybe we'll fill them in. It depends on what we're able to accomplish. Okay, then?